Wanna live freely, why isn't it so easy? I should read a book, but I keep watching this TV. And I know this lifestyle doesn't really feed me. I just tune out to the voice inside the speaking.
2:30 to 4, Monday to Friday. It is The Blitz here on AM 1450 KATE. Mitch Widmeyer here with you. Going to the phone lines, our guest today, as he hops on every week, Jim Suhan of the Star Tribune with us, has his own podcast network. You can find it at MNSPN.com. This, as always, is brought to you by Greenlee Golf Course. Jim, as always, your time's appreciated. We'll start with the Twins. Their season ended Tuesday night in the Bronx. I know you were there covering the game. They jumped on Luis Severino early. He only records one out before Joe Girardi has to go to the bullpen. And while, yes, it was super, super early on in the contest, you could not have scripted a better start for the Twins, could you?
No, it was a blast. I love covering games in Yankee Stadium. There's just a vibe there that you don't get in all major league parks. I loved old Yankee Stadium. New Yankee Stadium isn't quite the same, but, you know, you still have really rowdy Yankee fans. And I'm just so impressed. You know, obviously Dozier leads off with a home run, and we've come to expect that. But, you know, for Polanco and Rosario to end up being your 3-4 hitters and carrying that lineup at such a young age and with so little really, you know, overly impressive experience in the big leagues, for them to take the at-bats they took in the early innings and put the team up right away, I was just so impressed by that. And then I was rather appalled that Ervin Santana could give back a 3-run lead within 4 batters when he's supposed to be kind of the leader of the staff and in some ways leader of the team.
Yeah, and you mentioned Ervin Santana. He wasn't much better than Luis Severino, didn't last much longer, only going 2 innings, and he gave all the runs back in the bottom of the first. And one of the first decisions for Paul Molitor then was when to pull Ervin. And I actually did not mind him rolling Santana out for the second inning for one big reason, and that is that Joe Girardi has the luxury of an incredible bullpen with multiple different top-notch options, so the leash could be short on Severino. The Twins' bullpen doesn't really stack up to New York's, which is why I didn't mind Ervin Santana going out there for the second, even with his struggles in the first.
Agreed, and we've all seen plenty of games where somebody struggles early and then settles into a rhythm and actually gives their team a chance to win. But the counterpoint to that, I agree with you in general, but the counterpoint was you looked at Santana on the mound and you just knew he didn't have it. He looked, and that was the bad thing. It's one thing to get beat. It's another thing to get beat while looking flustered when you're a 34-year-old, you know, supposed ace. That was very bothersome. So I think. You know, I think Molitor is actually thinking along the way lines that you were thinking, which is, hey, am I really going to get 8 good innings out of my bullpen? Am I going to match up with the Yankees in that way? Santana's been their best pitcher all year. You got to give him another chance. But the alarming part was that Santana just didn't look up to it.
You mentioned that first inning where the Twins jumped on Severino for 3 runs. Dozier with the leadoff homer, Polanco, Rosario stepping up as well. I thought, Jim, the Twins, even after that first frame, were taking good at-bats. The Yankees' bullpen is just, I guess you can describe them as suffocating. That bullpen is suffocating for New York. Did you have the same sense that, really outside of Jason Castro at the dish, I thought there were great at-bats being taken by the Twins?
Yeah, I thought they took really good at-bats, but the Yankees really are that good. And that's the thing, is that, you know, the Yankees, you could see them, even as a wild card entrant, you could see them winning a championship. Their lineup is pretty scary. They have people who take good at-bats, and they have good starting pitching, and they have potentially excellent bullpen, and so many postseason games are decided by bullpens. I think this is going to be a fascinating postseason, and I don't always necessarily feel that way. I think Houston's fascinating. The Dodgers are fascinating because of their collapse, and yet they still have Kershaw at the top of the rotation. And a real closer. You have, Cleveland, I think, is the best team, but the best team doesn't always win. The Nationals are front-loaded with stars. The Cubs are the defending champions. It's a fascinating group, and the Yankees do scare me.
Jim Suhan of the Star Tribune, our guest this afternoon. Find his podcast network at MNSPN.com. This, as always, is brought to you by Greenlee Golf Course. How deflating was it for the Twins losing Byron Buxton, and can we lobby for him to wear football pads when in center field next year? I'd much rather have a player that goes too hard, gives too much, then the reverse, and you have to try to self-motivate a player. I'd write, give me the Buxton mantra and personality 10 times out of 10. But there's a fine line with him. Every time he makes a spectacular catch and slams into the wall, it's how do you go about trying to, because you don't want him to lose that edge, but how do you go about it, Jim, if you're Paul Molitor and the Twins, telling him, like, maybe, do you have him tone it down just a little?
I think you have to, because the problem with Byron is when he runs into something, he runs in full speed. And, you know, I mean, his injury in AAA a couple of years ago, you know, he went diving into a center, into Mike Kwasniewka in the outfield. There has to be some caution. And like, Buxton's a great kid, and he gives you maximum effort. And, you know, you love that about him. But they need him on the field. And he needs, you know, he needs to play 155 games a year, and he needs to have his limbs healthy so he can become the hitter that people expect him to be. And I had this conversation with Torrey Hunter all the time as a young player. He did the same thing. He would just run full speed into the wall, and everybody loved him for it. But that's no way to build a career.
So the Twins lose 8-4 to the Yankees on Tuesday night. Still an incredible year. One in which I think most would objectively look at and say the Twins no doubt overachieved. But now we turn the page. And, Jim, I don't see how you don't bring Paul Molitor back, even if it's just like a two-year deal. And I know Falvey and Levine may want their own guy. They're the new brain trust in this front office. These players seem to be comfortable and fine with Molitor. I think he's a good manager. It's just it's hard for me to envision a scenario where they don't bring him back.
I think he's a really good manager. He is, you know, that the Twins became one of the best base running teams in the big leagues this year. That doesn't happen by accident. They took really good bets. Molitor handles his coaches very well. He handles his players very well. He has, you know, a great relationship with the most important players on the team. They have tremendous respect for him. And you know, one of the challenges when you're a Hall of Famer is to appreciate the difficulty of the game for lesser players. He has shown that. You know, he treats the 25th man on the roster as well as he treats the top guy on the roster. He runs a clubhouse well. He's a great team spokesman, which is important when the GM and the COO don't really want to do much talking. I think he's ideal. And then you add in the fact that he's a Hall of Famer from St. Paul. It's just such an easy decision. You know, it's funny. I was talking to three Twins employees, not high-ranking Twins employees, but I was talking to three Twins employees in the Yankee Stadium dugout, and I brought up, I said this. I said, hey, you know, isn't it weird that Molitor still hasn't gotten an extension? And this is just a private, off-the-record conversation. And all three of the guys, like, looked away. Like, we're having this nice conversation. I brought that up, and they looked away like, you know, like basically they were saying, don't have a good feeling about this. Huh. And it's very strange that they would not, you know, I mean, today would be the perfect day to announce it. You don't have to do it the day you get back from New York, but today would be the perfect day to just announce it and clear it up. And the fact that they haven't done so yet, at least, you know, last time I checked, it feels a little unsettling.
And the other angle to it is, I don't know if they want to bark up that tree of pegging their own guy. Like, from a Cubs perspective, because I am a Cubs fan, when they brought in Joe Maddon, the year before that they had Rick Renteria, and when the rumors were going around that Joe Maddon may have interest and that Theo Epstein might go down that path, I was like, that's certainly intriguing, and Joe Maddon has a good track record in Tampa Bay. I don't know where this, like, bright and shining armor candidate for the managerial spot would be. I know some have brought up the name Brad Mills potentially, but certainly if they were to go the route of parting ways with Paul Molitor, you would think they would have a bucket list of guys they would want to plug in, and I don't see these incredible candidates out there right now.
I don't either, and that's a good point, because Joe Maddon was clearly the number one manager in baseball, and it was an easy decision for them to go get him. Here's the problem. It's not that they can't hire somebody else who wouldn't do the job well. It's not that the next manager won't or can't win with these players. It's what message are you sending if somebody performs well for you while acting with a lot of class and you don't treat them right? And that's where the Minkiewicz thing seemed to jump up and bother a lot of people in the organization. Okay, here's a guy who keeps winning, who's helped develop a lot of the players that you're now proud of and building your major league roster around, has a history with the franchise, has a lot of passion, and you didn't talk to him all year. You didn't go see his team play all year, and then you fired him without an explanation. It's not that the next guy won't do a good job. It's not that they don't have the right to do it. The question is, what message are you sending as leaders if you don't treat people well?
Always enjoy his time with us. He is Jim Suhan of the Star Tribune. Find his podcast network, MNSPN.com. As always, this segment is brought to you by Greenlee Golf Course. So certainly that would top the checklist on the clipboard for Falvey and Levine to get things kicking, to kind of get the tires kicking in the offseason. Outside of that, Jim, I think it's obvious that the Twins need pitching, and I really hope they do some spending in the offseason. I think every fan base would prefer their team to spend every single year if need be, but the Twins clearly need pitching help, and when you look at some of the names, bullpen arms that are free agents and available, and even some starters, there's some notable ones out there.
Yeah, and I am usually the person this time of year saying, don't put all your hope in free agency. It usually backfires. It usually weighs down your payroll with lost money. Usually you're signing pitchers who are all far along in their career, and they're not necessarily going to be durable or stay healthy, and some of them don't adapt well to the change. I mean, free agency is never as simple and easy as people want to make it out to be. But as I wrote about it in the Star Tribune today, this is a different year because this is a team definitely has the position-playing talent to win a championship and doesn't have the pitching depth or talent to win a championship. So this is when I think you do spend money in free agency. This is where you say, these position players are ready, and we need like three more arms at least to really make a run. I think this is when you roll the dice in that arena.
I know it's really, really premature and perhaps unfair for me to ask this question, but do you think they go about it that way, and do you think they will end up spending money depending on some of those names that sort of pop up on their radar?
My only honest answer I can give you is I have no idea how these guys are going to operate. These last winter, they came in and said, okay, this is a bad franchise, and we're going to slowly rebuild things and, you know, we'll add Belisle for a little bit of veteran bullpen help, and we'll upgrade defensively catcher, but we're not really trying to win this year. So we don't know how these guys are going to operate when that's on the table. Hey, if you make the right moves, this team might win. We just don't know. We also don't know what the interactions between them. I mean, you know, Terry Ryan would not bring a deal to the Pollads unless he thought it was a good deal. And, you know, and that's why the Pollads usually said yes when he brought them a deal, even if it cost them a lot of money. We don't know what the relationship between Falvey and the Pollads is. You know, if they go say, hey, we want to spend, you know, just to throw a stupid number out there, we want to spend $200 million on Yu Darvish. We don't know how the Pollads will react to that.
One thing that maybe we'll disagree on this, because I do want the Twins to address pitching, starting, and the bullpen, I would prefer that it doesn't come at the expense of trading a Brian Dozier or trading a position player unless you're getting either a can't miss prospect that you think is a complete home run, or you're getting a top of the line pitcher that's already developed and already proven himself. I prefer them to do it in free agency and not trade away one of the pieces they have already, position player wise.
Agreed. And that's the thing, is that last year when people are saying, oh yeah, trade away Irvin Santana and get two great pitching prospects, last winter, oh, you got to trade Dozier because he's high value and you can rebuild all your pitching. Well, that wasn't true. Dozier coming off a 42 home run all-star season would have gotten him Jose De Leon, who was an overhyped, okay pitching prospect. That's a terrible deal. And that I'll give Falvey and Levine credit for not making those stupid deals. You can't trade and not get back really good value. And Dozier is such a key part of this team. You just don't do it. Don't give away players. Don't give away quality. Don't give away leadership. Don't give away any of those things. Unless you really are getting sure things. And last year in the pitching market, nobody was willing to trade a sure thing pitcher.
Last note on the Twins, we'll transition to some Vikings after that. How big will the offseason be for Miguel Sano to get healthy, get in better shape if need be? Because he can clearly be a cornerstone for this franchise with the gobs and gobs of talent that he has. But I don't know, does he need some sort of talking to? Does he need perhaps a reality check? I don't know if that's too harsh of a term to use, but the offseason will be pivotal here for Miguel Sano, no?
Yes, absolutely. And I've been writing and talking about this for months now. He can't play at 290. He can play at 290. He can't play as well as he should be able to play. He can't stay as healthy as he should be able to stay if he's at 290. This guy should be a perennial all-star. This guy should be a perennial MVP candidate. The talent is immense. And playing at 290 just means that injuries are going to linger longer, that slumps are probably going to linger longer. He's going to be sluggish some days. And it's not a lack of work ethic. He's a hardworking, he works at baseball really hard. It's diet. It's just, you know, and he's just got to get that under control. And how you do that with a guy who's probably going to spend the winter in the Dominican Republic, I don't really know.
His work can be found in the Star Tribune podcast network at MNSPN.com. Jim Suhan, our guest this afternoon here on The Blitz, brought to you by Greenlee Golf Course. I thought we'd finish up on some non-Twins notes. The Vikings, the purple and gold, they lost to the Lions 14-7 last weekend. They traveled to Chicago for a Monday night game this week. Mitchell Trubisky, number 2 overall pick, making his NFL debut in the regular season. On the Vikings side of things, of course, headline number 1 is Dalvin Cook. They lose him to a torn ACL. Latavius Murray will get the start at running back. And I saw this morning, I believe the Vikings signed Stephen Ridley for depth purposes. Latavius Murray, to me, Jim, he's a good back, like he's no slouch, but it's somewhat crazy to me that the drop-off from Dalvin Cook to Latavius seems, and in some cases, is so significant because of how dang good Dalvin was playing. You would just think Latavius Murray is some mediocre fill-in, but I don't believe he is. Dalvin Cook was just that good.
Well, I think that Latavius Murray, the way he played last year, would have been a nice, really good NFL backup and not a bad starter. Cook is clearly better, but I think the reason Cook is, the gap is as immense as it is that Murray just hasn't been the guy. I think they got damaged goods. You watched him run against the Lions. There were yards to be made, and he didn't make them. He could not make people miss. He doesn't move well laterally. He was a pretty good NFL running back, and he's not a good, pretty good NFL running back right now. That ankle injury turned out to be much more serious than anybody would have thought, or he didn't do enough to rehab himself.
How do the Vikings overcome this one? I guess the better question is, can they overcome this one? I'm still in line, Jim, with if they get Bradford back, even without Dalvin, they can compete. But without Bradford and Dalvin Cook, I think it'd be slim pickings.
I agree. And this will be an interesting test because this is a game they're probably going to have to win with defense. They have a very good defense playing against a rookie quarterback in his first NFL start. The defense should be able to win this game, but I think they're going to have to slug it out. I don't see this offense without Cook or Bradford, you know, lighting anybody up, even as good as the wide receivers are. And remember, even really good Viking teams tend to struggle in Chicago. There's something about the turf and the atmosphere. They don't necessarily play that well down there. So this is kind of a dangerous game.
We'll wrap things up on this. How do you put in context the Minnesota Lynx? They've won 4 titles now in 7 years after they ousted the Los Angeles Sparks in 5 games last night in the barn. I know you cover them as well. How significant is it in Minnesota sports history? How well built, how sound is that franchise?
Well, it's been a blast. I've been able to cover them in Olympics and in championships. I was in Atlanta when they won their first title together. I know Whalen very well. It's a group of people that you feel really good for because, you know, all the things you want to see in sports, real teamwork, real unselfishness, you know, hard work, toughness, clutch play, all the things you want to see all the time, you see pretty much all the time you watch the Lynx. So it's heartening to see people like that, you know, be rewarded. And it's just, it's dramatic, it's fun, it's great atmosphere at the games. It's a blast, and I just hope that they all come back and try it again next year, even though success is not guaranteed, and Whalen and Brunson certainly are getting up there in age. I want to see this group stay together as long as possible.
Find his work in the Star Tribune, folks. They've got some tremendous podcasts. You can find them at MNSPN.com. Jim, as always, the time's appreciated.
Thank you, Mitch. Appreciate it.
We'll wrap things up talking MLB postseason next.